The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Mark Newman from the Triangle Radio Reading Service, and for the next half hour, I shall share with you information from various medical sources. The People's Pharmacy, Joe and Teresa Graydon. Coffee stimulates colon activity, studies find. Question. I have found that my body reacts in a very predictable manner to my morning cup of coffee. Usually within 5 to 10 minutes, I have to go to the bathroom. Is it the caffeine or something else in coffee that stimulates the bowels? Answer. You are not the first person to notice this effect. We used to think the caffeine was responsible, but scientists have shown that regular and decaf coffee stimulate colon activity, and that's cited in the journal Gut, April 1st, 1990. Caffeinated coffee does seem to have a stronger effect, however, and that's cited in the European Journal of Gastroenterology and Hepatology, February 1998. Recently, scientists tested coffee in rats and found that both decaf and high test increased the power of intestinal muscle contractions. The coffee treatments also changed the composition of the rat's gut microbes, though no one is certain what that means for digestive health. New home remedy for blister, soy sauce. From your column, I learned about using soy sauce on burns. This weekend, I scraped paint for 6 hours and raised a blister on my thumb. I put soy sauce on a bandage and covered the blister overnight. It looked better in the morning, so I replaced the bandage with a fresh one with soy sauce on the pad. By that evening, the blister was completely gone, and so was the pain. I don't know yet if I will lose the skin on that spot, but it feels healed. Answer. A decade ago, a radio show listener in Oregon told us about several impressive instances in which he had used soy sauce to avoid damage from a burn. A reader responded later, I listened to your public radio show and heard a man call in recommending soy sauce for burns. How weird is that, I thought. But then as I took a loaf of bread out of the oven, the inner edge of my thumb and the fleshy pad underneath hit the metal rim of the pan. I expected a painful burn. Since I had nothing else at hand, I decided to try the soy sauce remedy. The pain eased up in less than a minute. Your report is the first we've seen about using soy sauce for friction blisters, although we can't explain how it works. Question. Dr. Louis Ignaro is a distinguished professor of pharmacology at UCLA. He has written a book, No More Heart Disease. In it, he describes the use of L-arginine, which is converted into nitric oxide in the body. I called him several years ago to see if the research has changed, and it has not. I have been taking L-arginine for 10 years, and my blood pressure is excellent. Nitric oxide is indeed important in controlling blood pressure. A number of natural substances, such as beet juice and cocoa flavonoids, act through this mechanism. A placebo-controlled trial found that people who took a combination of L-arginine and B vitamins had more flexible blood vessels and lower blood pressure. European Journal of Nutrition, March 2018. The daily dose was 2.4 grams of L-arginine, 3 milligrams of vitamin B6, 0.4 milligrams of folic acid, and 2 micrograms of vitamin B12. The volunteers took this German product called Telcor arginine, it's spelled T-E-L-C-O-R, second word is arginine, A-R-G-I-N-I-N, plus, P-L-U-S, for 3 months. The drop in systemic blood pressure was statistically significant and comparable to the effect of many blood pressure medicines. Question. I have been on metformin for about 3 weeks for prediabetes and polycystic ovary syndrome, PCOS. I started with 500 milligrams, and I am supposed to ramp up to taking it 3 times a day, half an hour before each meal. I don't know if I can manage that. Right now I'm experiencing stomach upset, nausea, and diarrhea. It is hard to take. The doctor says this effect will go away. Is that true? Answer, diarrhea and nausea are very common side effects when people start taking metformin. Many people do find that the initial digestive distress diminishes with time. Others can't tolerate the drug. Metformin works by decreasing insulin resistance. That may be why it can help PCOS. This hormonal condition is associated with too much insulin, insulin resistance, and chronic inflammation. Question. As a doctor, I prescribe generic ketamine, K-E-T-A-M-I-N-E, for my hard-to-treat depressed patients. A compounding pharmacy makes it into an affordable nasal spray. My patients have called it a game changer. Answer. Ketamine, or brand name Ketalar, K-E-T-A-L-A-R, has been available since 1970 as an injectable anesthetic. Some doctors have prescribed it off-label for people with chronic pain or challenging depression. The generic form is relatively inexpensive. The Food and Drug Administration approved a chemical cousin to ketamine. It's called esketamine, and the brand name is Spravato, which is now available. A study published in the American Journal of Psychiatry on May 21, 2019, found that esketamine nasal spray worked better than placebo nasal spray to alleviate treatment-resistant depression. From the Associated Press, by Marilyn Marchione, Drugs Make Headway Against Lung, Breast, and Prostate Cancers, out of Chicago. Newer drugs are substantially improving the chances of survival for some people with hard-to-treat forms of lung, breast, and prostate cancers, doctors reported at the world's largest cancer conference recently. Among those who have benefited is Roselle Mack, Jr., who at age 87 is still able to work at a Lexington, Kentucky horse farm 9 years after being diagnosed with lung cancer that had spread to his bones and lymph nodes. "I go in every day. I'm the first one there," said Mack, who helped test Merck's Keytruda, a therapy that helps the immune system identify and fight cancer. "I'm feeling well and I have a good quality of life. The downside, many of these drugs cost $100,000 or more a year." The results were featured recently at the American Society of Clinical Oncology conference in Chicago, and here are some highlights. Lung cancer. Immunotherapy drugs such as Keytruda have transformed the treatment of many types of cancer, but they are still fairly new and don't help most patients. The longest study yet of Keytruda in patients with advanced lung cancer found that 23% of those who got the drug as part of their initial therapy survived at least 5 years, whereas 16% of those who tried other treatments first did. In the past, only about 5% of such patients lived that long. Breast cancer. The risk of this rises with age, but about 48,000 cases each year in the U.S. are in women under age 50. About 70% are hormone positive, HER2 negative. That is, the cancer's growth is fueled by estrogen or progesterone and not by the gene that the drug Herceptin targets. In a study of 672 women with such cancers that had spread or were very advanced, adding the Novartis drug Kisqali, which is spelled K-I-S-Q-A-L-I, to the usual hormone blockers as initial therapy helped more than hormone therapy alone. And then prostate cancer. The options keep expanding for men with prostate cancer that has spread beyond the gland. Standard treatment is drugs that block the male hormone testosterone, which helps these cancers grow, plus chemotherapy or a newer drug called Zytiga, Z-Y-T-I-G-A. Now, two other drugs have proven able to extend survival when used like chemo or Zytiga in men who were getting usual hormone therapy and still being helped by it. One study tested Xtandi, which is spelled X, or Xtandi, X-T-A-N-D-I, sold by Pfizer and Astellas Pharma, Inc., in 1,125 men, half of whom also are getting chemo. After 3 years, 80% of those given Xtandi plus standard treatments were alive, compared to 70% of men given the other treatment alone. The other study involved 1,052 men who were given hormone therapy with or without the Janssen drug Erleada, spelled E-R-L-E-A-D-A. After 2 years, survival was 82% among those on Erleada and 74% among those who were not. Burned out at work? Now you can get a doctor's note. And that's from the Sun Sentinel. Cindy Chrysler Gorman wrote this. In updating its Handbook of Diseases, the World Health Organization has defined burnout as an official condition or, quote, occupational phenomena, unquote. Doctors can diagnose someone with burnout if they show three symptoms: depletion or exhaustion, mental distance or negativity toward their job, and reduced ability to complete tasks. WHO says burnout as a syndrome conceptualized as resulting from chronic workplace stress that has not been successfully managed. This should have happened a long time ago, said Bob Preziosi, professor emeritus in leadership and human resources management at Nova Southeastern University's Herzinga College of Business in Davie, Florida. We have all seen people suffer physically and emotionally from burnout. This happens in businesses, public agencies, and even not-for-profits. WHO reached the decision to update its definition of burnout during its recent World Health Assembly in Geneva. A diagnosis of burnout, however, would not apply to anxiety or mood disorders. In the U.S., researchers have been studying burnout as workplaces have become more demanding and workers more attached to their smartphones in response to 24/7 demands. Studies show it leads to outcomes such as substance abuse, severe depression, suicide, and physical health conditions. Preziosi said he has seen burnout in the state's white and blue-collar workers. In Florida, pressure stems in part from tourism demands and rush periods, or businesses' need to stay ahead of competitors. It harms productivity eventually, he said. The precursor is when people start to get testy and take it out on their coworkers, family, or even their pets. In Florida, both the Florida Bar Association and the Florida Medical Association have looked at how to prevent burnout in their professions. Christian George, president of the Young Lawyers Division of the Florida Bar, said the problem of burnout surfaces often with millennial lawyers who want to please clients and prove themselves. His division has spent the last year trying to address mental health concerns head-on. We know for some, it's hard to walk away and take a break. While we know burnout will never be completely eliminated, we are trying to get the message out there that self-care makes you a better lawyer, George said. One solution to burnout, Preziosi says, is to encourage more reflection by managers and workers. We all jump to the next thing on our calendar, and that's going on all day and into the night and weekend. If we would stop and reflect and look at what we just finished and went wrong and what went right and why, we could prevent a lot of the burnout. Burnout at a glance. Health problems linked to stress and burnout include heart attack, obesity, depression, insomnia, irritable bowel syndrome, and diabetes. Common traits of burnout are excessive devotion to work and productivity at the exclusion of leisure activities, relationships, and friendships, and the inability to delegate tasks. From the Costco Connection magazine, no pain, all gain. Knowing what to take for what pains you. One in four Americans has pain lasting more than 24 hours, according to the National Institutes of Health. Luckily, many minor aches and pains can be managed easily with over-the-counter medications. However, choosing the best product can be tricky with so many options on the market. Betty Luton, a population health pharmacist at Banner Health, offers members advice on product selection. Choose your over-the-counter pain medication based on the location of your pain, she says. For example, caffeine is in some headache medications like Excedrin. The caffeine constricts blood vessels, which become dilated and pounding headaches. Topicals, products that can be applied to the skin, are great for pain close to the skin, such as knee, elbow, joint, and wrist, because the medication is applied directly to the injured site. Since very little of the medication gets into the bloodstream when it's applied to the skin, there is a lower risk of side effects. Ice and heat can also relieve back, shoulder, and joint pain. The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention warns that, like prescription drugs, over-the-counter pain meds carry risks. Typical over-the-counter pain medications may contain ingredients that can irritate the skin, for example, capsaicin, which is a component of hot peppers. High doses of acetaminophen can cause liver damage. Non-steroidal anti-inflammatory drugs, or NSAIDs, can upset the stomach and increase bleeding risk. Many OTC medications contain acetaminophen. It is important to read the labels. If a product does contain acetaminophen, you don't need to take extra acetaminophen tablets. Dr. Bob Arnott, a former Olympic physician and NBC chief medical correspondent, advises choosing topicals whenever possible, especially for pain in areas that you can touch. Some pain, such as cancer pain or pain on the pelvic and abdominal areas, always needs a doctor's treatment. Also see your doctor for headaches. They can be life-threatening in some cases. Rotation fixation. A complex mechanism, the shoulder is highly susceptible to injury and other conditions. The shoulder consists of several bones linked to many tendons and muscles. Shoulders allow us to move our arms, but most people don't realize that the shoulder is a very complex joint and body region, possibly the most complicated region of our musculoskeletal system, says Michael Parlator, a physical therapist and clinical manager at Moss Rehab in Elkins Park, Pennsylvania, outside Philadelphia. And that's precisely why the shoulder is so easy to injure, because it is a very mobile joint, allowing us to reach high overhead or behind and around our back. It comes with a lack of stability. Problems can arise when we lack the muscle strength and stability to control all this motion. It is also common for certain parts of the shoulder to become overworked and irritated. With so many moving parts, there are different reasons why a person could have shoulder pain. Medical professionals usually categorize shoulder problems as being caused by trauma, such as an accident, the result of overuse, or degenerative due to arthritis or excessive wear and tear, says Dr. David H. Watt, a sports and shoulder surgeon at Northwestern Medicine Central DuPage Hospital in Illinois. These categories often may overlap. Traumatic injuries, for example, can be fractures, dislocations, or rotator cuff tears. Overuse, which causes most common shoulder injuries, can be responsible for tendonitis and bursitis. Rotator cuff injuries. By far the most common shoulder condition requiring treatment is a rotator cuff injury, with approximately one-third of people over the age of 60 having a rotator cuff tear. The rotator cuff consists of four muscles and tendons that come from scapula, shoulder blade, and attach all around the head of the shoulder or humerus, and functions to stabilize and rotate the shoulder. Rotator cuff tears that occur because of a traumatic event often need surgery, whereas tears that occur over time, secondary to age-related changes, can often get better without surgery, says Dr. Brian Graw, an orthopedic surgeon and an assistant professor at the University of Cincinnati College of Medicine in the Department of Orthopedic Surgery, Divisions of Sports Medicine and Shoulder Reconstruction. Shoulder arthritis. Although nowhere near as common as it is in the hip or knee, arthritis does occur in the shoulder and can be quite disabling, causes pain, particularly at night, and difficulty doing even basic activities of daily living, including driving, Watts says. Shoulder arthritis may occur as a result of degeneration, which from osteoarthritis, rheumatoid arthritis, prior injury, or neglected rotator cuff tears. Initial care of shoulder arthritis involves activity modifications, anti-inflammatory medications such as ibuprofen, naproxen, or cortisone injections, and light exercise to optimize mobility and function. Physical therapy might also be prescribed, Watts says. Shoulder replacement usually is a last resort, but can be very effective in relieving pain and improving function, according to Watt. He says, like hip and knee replacement surgery, it is a major surgery done in a hospital setting with a 1 or 2 day stay. Light dexterity hand activities are started immediately, but healing and rehabilitation goes on for about 3 to 4 months. Other conditions. Shoulder bursitis can result when the tiny fluid sacs around the shoulder joints and on top of the rotator cuff tendons become swollen and inflamed from repetitive actions. Dr. John McGillivray, a sports medicine surgeon at the Hospital for Special Surgery in New York City, says shoulder bursitis or impingement usually responds well to physical therapy and NSAIDs. Adhesive capsulitis, better known as frozen shoulder, causes severe pain and limited mobility and is more common in women over the age of 40 and in diabetics and has no known cause. McGillivray notes, he says, it responds extremely well to a cortisone shot if detected within the first month of the presentation of pain and stiffness of the shoulder. Physical therapy and therapeutic stretching exercise also are prescribed, he adds. Treatment options. Pain that doesn't go away or seem to get better in a few days of home care using ice over-the-counter non-steroidal anti-inflammatory drugs, analgesic patches or rubs, and rest needs to be evaluated by a healthcare professional. He or she will usually order diagnostic tests such as x-rays or MRIs to determine what is wrong and develop a treatment plan, which can include such options as physical therapy, therapeutic exercise, or surgery. Not all shoulder problems will require surgery, says orthopedic surgeon Brian Gaw. Oftentimes, people with shoulder pain can get better with a steroid injection and focused physical therapy. Get in front of back pain. Exploring your options for prevention and treatment of all this, of this all too common complaint. Chances are that you know or someone you know will have back pain. According to an article published in the Journal of Pain in 2012, it is a big problem affecting 80% of the population in the United States at some point in their lives, with 32 million Americans experiencing lower back pain each year, and the number has only grown. Lower back pain is now the number one cause of disability globally, according to a study published in Lancet in 2018. Causes for back pain include disc bulges and herniations, which press on spinal nerve roots, plus osteoarthritic changes such as bone spurs, vertebral fractures, cancer, and spinal infections. The vast majority of back pain, however, is nonspecific, which is to say the pain is not attributable to a specific cause. What research tells us? Given the advances of technology in so many areas of medicine, it would be reasonable to expect a breakthrough in back pain to come from technology, but research shows disappointing and often negative results from this direction. Dr. John Adler, Professor Emeritus of Neurosurgery at Stanford, says, every year, tens of thousands of patients undergo major back surgery without any benefits. According to Dan Churkin, Senior Scientific Investigator Emeritus with Kaiser Permanente Washington Health Research Institute, there is a big gap between what back pain research supports and what is actually practiced. For uncomplicated acute pain, often the best advice is to get on with your life as best as you can. For non-specific chronic back pain, structured exercise programs or psychological or meditative approaches are generally safer and more effective than some commonly used medical interventions such as opioids and epidural steroid injections. Good data for good decisions. When it comes to deciding on which treatments to try, most back pain sufferers base their decisions on very little data. My neighbor had good results with a chiropractor, or I've read that prolotherapy is good for sacroiliac joint issues. Searching medical literature is a step in the right direction, but journals are difficult to access and confusing for the lay public, and carry bias based on funders and advertisers. In the last few years, a new way to explore treatment options has arisen. Patients can go to crowdsourcing websites and see how thousands of back pain sufferers have rated different treatments that they have tried. This is a lot easier than working through journal articles and seems to have validity. In a paper titled, Is Crowdsourcing Patient-Reported Outcomes the Future of Evidence-Based Medicine? A Case Study of Back Pain, Stanford researchers reported on the lower back pain section of the crowdsourcing website, healthoutcome.org. They found that with the large numbers of people contributing, the results are consistent with those from randomized controlled trials. Dr. D.J. Kennedy, professor and chair of the Department of Physical Medicine and Rehabilitation at Vanderbilt University, says, I am very enthusiastic about approaches that effectively combine education, exercise, and a positive psychology into all aspects of living. By focusing more widely on the underlying causes of pain, such as abnormal posture, we may be able to not only treat but also prevent a large proportion of the common causes of some spine pain. So if you suffer from back pain, educate yourself, including on crowdsourcing websites. Stay engaged in your daily life, remain as active as possible, and keep a positive stance. Get glutes going. An undeveloped, tucked under behind affects the shape of your spine and the health of your back. Glute amnesia occurs when your glutes do not activate properly and is caused by using the quads and psoas, or the loin muscles rather than the glutes, to walk. It results in a flat butt, unsteady gait, and increased risk of falling. To activate your glutes while walking, do the following. Do not tuck in your pelvis. Leave your behind you. Lean your torso a little forward, so it is in line with a straight back leg. Squeeze the glute of your standing leg to propel yourself forward into the next stride. And finally, keep your weight back and land your front foot gently on the ground by keeping your glute squeezed. Every step is a rep. Movement options, recommendations. Stay active in a structured exercise program. Gym and outdoor exercises improve strength, flexibility, cardiovascular health. Yoga. Yoga stretches and strengthens the body and calms the mind. Done with good form, yoga helps you have improved posture. And then finally, dance. Samba is a great exercise and fun. Well, we have run out of time for today's episode of Health Issues. Be sure to listen at the same time next week. We hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Mark Newman, reading for the Triangle Radio Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. This broadcast is readily available as a podcast after the broadcast at our website, TriangleReadingService.org. So long until next time. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138 and stay healthy.